Support for the morning show comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Jack and Drea, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. In part one of today's program, we're going to be previewing for you a delightful comedy that is about to open this weekend at the Racine Theater Guild called Indoor Outdoor. We're going to be speaking with James Fletcher, who is the guest director for that production. For part two of today's program, I hope we're going to be joined by Dr. James Kinchin from the music faculty of the University of Wisconsin, Parkside. I just realized that I had failed to confirm his visit, but we had tentative plans for him to join us today to talk about a choral concert that is coming up this weekend involving the choirs of UW-Parkside in collaboration with the choirs at Indian Trails High School. And so I hope we'll be seeing Dr. James Kinchin in part two of today's program. And unhappily, we will take that opportunity, if Dr. Kinchin is able to join us, to also talk about the unhappy news of Tim Bell's death yesterday morning. Tim Bell is so well known to the entire music community here in southeastern Wisconsin, in both Kenosha and Racine, a most beloved musician in so many respects. And of course, for WGTD listeners, Tim Bell is a well-known voice hosting a Saturday night jazz program, Big Bands and Beyond, and hosting that program with such a special combination of expertise and charm. So this is a loss that we are feeling on all kinds of different levels. So our heartfelt condolences to the family and friends of Tim Bell on this sudden loss that affects so many of us deeply. A quick word about some other morning shows that are coming up in the near future, and then we'll get to part one of today's program. Tomorrow on the morning show, we'll be talking about the Chicago Cubs. They, of course, are engaged in a battle for survival in the Major League Baseball playoffs. I'll be speaking on Friday with Rich Cohen, who is the author of a book called The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse, which looks at the long history of the Chicago Cubs and the history of their long-suffering fans. And it's a great book, and we had a fun conversation I look forward to sharing with you tomorrow. On Monday, you'll hear from Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, paying his monthly visit to the program. It will be a visit in celebration of October as Manufacturing Month, and we'll be talking about some of the groundbreaking ways in which manufacturing is changing dramatically. And that conversation will include some comments about the development of Foxconn here in southeastern Wisconsin. Next week is also going to include a conversation with James Nyber, and he is a local author who has joined me before, and we will be talking this time around about a really interesting book that has just been published called The Monster Movies of Universal Studios, in which we hear what James Nyber has to say about such famous films as Dracula, Frankenstein, The Mummy, The Bride of Frankenstein, The Invisible Man and The Invisible Man Returns, and many other great, great classics in this fascinating genre. We'll most likely be airing that on Tuesday. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, which is wgtd.org. Click on Talk. Here's part one of today's program. Tomorrow night, a comedy opens at the Racine Theater Guild, and I have heard nothing but great things about Indoor, Outdoor by Kenny Winkle. And joining me for the next few minutes of WGTD's morning show is James Fletcher, who is the guest director brought in to oversee this production, which will run for the next several weekends on the stage of the Racine Theater Guild. James Fletcher, we welcome you to the morning show.
Nice to be here.
I understand that you have directed on at least one other occasion at the Racine Theater Guild, but otherwise your sort of base of operation is elsewhere. Tell us a little bit about what you do and where you do it.
Sure. I'm a theater professional living in Milwaukee. So I am an actor, director, fight choreographer. I have my own theater company that I'm the producer of and artistic director, and then I also write plays myself. So and teach as well. So between all those things, try to put a whole career together.
Wow, I am quite impressed by all of that. Tell us more about your own theater company.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's called the Bunny Gumbo Theater Company, and one of the things that we've been in existence since 1999. And one of the things that we do a couple times a year is something called combat theater. And those are all plays that are written, directed, and acted all within 24 hours. So we've been having a lot of fun with that.
So these pieces come together that quickly?
Yeah, I mean, they do, yeah. The writers meet with me the night before. They pick a subject out of one hat and a location out of another. And they have to have a 15-minute play written by the next day. They're then randomly cast from the actors we have. Directors randomly assigned to each piece. And 24 hours after the process started, we put that up, and then we do it again the next night with a little less time.
Wow. That sounds like an extraordinary undertaking. And I suppose it's a combination. You need a particular kind of playwright up to that challenge and interested in that kind of challenge. And you also have to have actors open to willing to undertake that.
It's been a great thing for the Milwaukee theater community. It brings all these folks together from all these different theater companies for that one weekend, and they play really nice.
Yeah.
And the plays are typically great. It's something about not just staring in front of a blank screen and willing yourself to write something. You know, you're given a time limit, and the very fact that, you know, you are given that subject and location immediately gets the brain going, and a lot of the pieces are great.
Wow. You also yourself are a playwright. Do you just write plays within that tight time frame, or do you also write plays the way normal people write plays normally?
That process as well, but I've written several full-length plays, and I've got two in the works right now that I'm working on. So,
was it always your intention at the outset that you would have a career in which you're keeping all kinds of different plates spinning in the air, or was your initial intention to do be more specialized?
I went to undergrad and grad school for acting. I got my MFA in acting from the Professional Theater Training program that no longer exists here in Milwaukee. And along the way, but I was trained, I had 3 years of fight work during that. And at some point, someone asked me to do some simple stuff. And eventually the word got out, and I tend to get more and more work just from word of mouth. So for instance, right now I'm also doing the fight choreography for Peter and the Starcatcher out at Pius High School. But I lived in Los Angeles for a couple of years, and I got involved with the theater there, and that's what prompted me to start my own theater company when I moved back to Milwaukee. And while I was there, I also had a very good friend who had written a one-man show that I loved, and that prompted me to start writing. And my first play was terrible. It will never see the light of day, but I've been plying that trade ever since.
Interesting. I've never tried to write a play, but it's one of those things that I feel like someday I would like to try, and in a strange sort of way, I have this kind of naive sense of confidence that I would probably write a great play. And I think, in fact, the more I really think about it, the more I realize that's just not at all likely. And probably a lot of people, as they sit down to write their first play, have some kind of sense that they already know how to do it. And it's only when you actually set about the task that you realize just how complicated it is to create a full-length play from scratch.
Yeah, it can be. There are plays that I've written in an hour. There was one that I had a dream, and I woke up, and I thought that would make a great play. And 10 minutes later, I was scurrying to get some paper and write it down before I forgot it. And that play has actually been since produced. It was produced at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater a couple years ago. But then there's others that the one that I'm currently revising has been a five-year process. There was a lot of research that went into it and really figuring out how to get into it. So some come quick, some take quite a while.
Before we talk about this specific play, Kenny Finkel's Indoor-Outdoor, I want to just find out from you sort of what the experience is like for the phone to ring and for a theater company, for instance, in Racine, to reach out to you and secure your services to be a guest director. What does it feel like to step into an unfamiliar place and presumably work with, at least for the most part, completely unfamiliar actors? What is that like in general, and how has it been for you at the Racine Theater Guild more specifically?
Yeah, it's always, I mean, first of all, it's always nice to get those calls. You know, it tends to mean that you've done something right in the past and someone has recommended you or seen your work. So that's always great. And it was nicer coming in this time because I was more familiar with the space itself, its limitations, its assets. And I always enjoy meeting new actors that have not been on my radar before. So all four of the actors are brand new to me. Three have worked at the Racine Theater Guild before, and the fourth actually makes the trip down from Wauwatosa each day.
Wow.
But the people there, I mean, they couldn't be nicer and more helpful. And there's a ton of them that are working backstage, you know, on props, on lights, on sound, stage managers, the costumers, makeup people. It's just a really nice community, and they so thoroughly, you know, look like they enjoy being there. So that's been great, and
right,
getting to know them as well.
And of course, it's a great physical space as well in which to create theater. So let's talk about this comedy called Indoor Outdoor by Kenny Finkel. I was just looking over his biography, and I don't see any titles that I recognize, but it looks like he has been around for a little while, and it looks like this play has generated a whole lot of enthusiasm. Can you tell us more about Kenny Finkel and his career before we talk about this specific play?
Yeah, I really I don't know really anything about Kenny Finkel himself, and he was not on my radar at all, and I wasn't aware of his work. So I read the play, and it's, you know, at first it comes off as extremely light, almost farcical comedy, and it's not until you get into it a little bit that you find out just really how clever it is. It's the story, you know, you find out right away. This woman comes out on stage, and she tells you she's a cat, and this is her life story that she's going to tell. And then we go from there, and that's what she does during the course of the play. But what makes it clever is that, you know, if you had a human being coming out there and say, I'm going to tell you my life story, you know, you might groan, okay, you know. But there's something about, you know, anyone who's had a pet knows how brief, you know, relatively speaking, their lives are. And so it really draws you in very quickly.
It's an intriguing notion, that's for sure. And I suppose one of the real tricks is to make sure you have cast somebody as Samantha who really makes that work. I mean, that unconventional challenge. Tell us about what kind of actor is required to be a convincing cat.
Well, first of all, you have to know that that actor's job is monumental because Alyssa, who plays Samantha the cat, never leaves the stage the whole time. I mean, it's just a monster load of lines and, you know, the physical requirements as well. It's a physical show, I believe, with my background and what I brought to it. We have made it more physical than it reads on the page. But all my actors have been complete game for everything that I've thrown at them, and they've been great. It isn't, you know, Kenny Finkel starts out saying right away, these are to be played, you know, they say they're a cat, but they're not to be, you know, they don't have whiskers, they don't have ears, they don't have a tail, they're not to be crawling around and acting like a cat. There's some very specific times when they do. But I also found in Alyssa Falvey, an actress who, you know, really undertook all that. And when she does have to give those slight indications that she's a cat, she's a tremendous physical actor as well.
Hmm. So this is a cast of four. Is Samantha the only cat?
No. She falls in love with another cat named Oscar, and her mom is also portrayed at, in a couple different scenes. We've got four actors, but only two of them play just the one part. So Alyssa Falvey plays Samantha, and David Geisler plays Schumann, the person who adopts and owns her. But then Kate Fisher, she plays not only mom, but Matilda, the cat therapist. And then Zach, Kyle, he has several different roles. So he plays three different roles in quick succession in the beginning. Then he turns into Oscar. He does a couple of voice stuff over the microphone at one point. And then at the end, he plays the newborn child, Abbott. So he's running around making a lot of quick costume changes.
Sounds like a tricky play to bring together. Can you
it
say?
It is. And I have to say it was a little off-putting at first when I was first reading the play, because it takes place in all these different locations. At some point, Oscar has to break through a skylight and fall on the stage. And just trying to get my head wrapped around how we were going to stage this was driving me a little nutty until I decided to get away from any kind of realism. So all we have is a silhouette of this house that Schumann lives in, and all these different elements come rolling onto the stage.
Hmm. Explain the title, Indoor, Outdoor. I mean, obviously we've all heard of indoor cats and outdoor cats, but how does that play out through the course of this sure. story?
Yeah, everything, you know, everything in this play is a metaphor for, you know, the different relationships and everything that we go through in life. So this is a cat that finds out shortly after she's born that she's going to be sent to the animal shelter and needs to find someone to adopt her quickly, or, you know, what happens in animal shelters. And she gets adopted and she becomes this indoor cat, and she thinks that's all she needs or wants. But then she finds out that her owner doesn't always understand her when she's trying to speak, because, of course, she's speaking of cat and he's not. And then she meets this other cat that comes up to their sliding glass door, and she realizes that there's something beyond those walls. There's something outside. And I think, as is true with any relationship, you know, the grass can always be greener on the other side, and you might find yourself wanting that, or at least to try that. And that's indeed what happens in this play. But it's also about, you know, getting inside yourself. You know, people see you from the outside, and they have, you know, in any true loving relationship, they have to get to know what is inside that person as well. So that all kind of works into the title there.
Hmm.
And it was important to me when I was talking to the scenic designer that both those elements be present. I didn't want to be entombed in this indoor house, because the outdoor portion is very important as well. So she was great, and the set design really enables both those elements to work very well on that stage.
Hmm. Did you know this play before you said yes to directing it, or did you say yes and then read the play and realize you had such a sort of a complicated challenge on your hands?
No, I will never say yes to a play until I've at least had a chance to read it. The process was very quickly. Doug got a hold of me, asked if I'd be interested. I asked him to send me the script, and I got a chance over the course of the week. I was teaching all summer to take a look at it. And by the end of it, you know, I still, again, hadn't gotten around to the scenic elements, and I was still a little you know, unsure of how I was going to deal with that. But I knew I had time, because this was sometime during the summer, that I would be able to work that out. So within a week, I had signed on board.
Very good. Well, and of course, you were signing on, as you knew, to a theater organization with a pretty strong technical background, and so when it comes to a play that poses some challenges, you probably could take on an assignment like this with a little more confidence than you otherwise might.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, you know, we've been working on this since the beginning of September, but it's just in this last week now that we're getting all the other elements, you know, so the actual set, being able to be on stage. The last two nights we have been working on tech, adding the light and sound cues. There's a lot, especially in the first act, a lot of light and sound cues, working on the quick changes last night with the costumers. So, yeah, we're at that point where, you know, now we need an audience. You know, it's always a curious thing with a comedy. You know, you find all the elements funny when you're first working on it, and a few weeks later, everyone stops laughing. And you start to get worried that, oh, maybe this isn't funny anymore. And, of course, it always is, but they need to find out where those laughs are.
Hmm. So, indoor-outdoor opens tomorrow night. What has been most challenging, especially in terms of working with your actors and bringing this all together?
Just the line load, you know, for, you know, it's not just Samantha, but she's got the, you know, the largest line load, but just getting them through that. And, you know, these are all, first of all, they're all really nice people. And as a cast, it's fantastic to see, because they didn't all know each other, how well they've gotten along. And, you know, they've formed a relationship outside the theater. But these are all people that are, you know, working full-time jobs during the day and then having to come to rehearsal every night. So, you know, that's a hard thing. You know, in the professional theater, that's our job. You know, we get the luxury of having 8-hour rehearsals that are just about working on the craft. And these guys have to put in a full day and then show up on the nights and weekends and do that in addition to it. So, but they've all been up to the task. They're all doing such a great job. So
great.
I can't wait to get to opening night.
Super. I've spoken to a couple of the cast members whom I know, and they are speaking glowingly, not only about the play, but about the experience of working with you and about how terrific this this cast is and how much fun this play is going to be for those who come and see it. So again, opening tomorrow night and running for the next several weekends, Indoor Outdoor by Kenny Finkel at the Racine Theater Guild. And you can go to racinetheaterguild.org for more information or call their box office at 262-633-4218. James Fletcher, the guest director in charge of this delight. James Fletcher, thank you for making time for this, and best wishes to you and to the cast and crew of Indoor Outdoor.
Thanks so much.
Part two with Dr. James Kinchin from the University of Wisconsin Parkside in a moment here on WGTD's Morning Show. It's 8:33. For part two of today's morning show, I'm really pleased to be able to be joined in the studios by Dr. James Kinchin, who is the Director of Choral Activities at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. We had scheduled this visit from Dr. Kinchin some time ago to talk about a choral concert that is happening this weekend, Sunday afternoon, actually, at 5 p.m., a concert at UW-Parkside that features not only the Parkside choirs, but also the top choir of Indian Trails High School here in Kenosha under the direction of John Che, a concert that will include a Mozart Mass, affectionately known as the Sparrow Mass. And we will take a few minutes to be talking about that concert, of course, but also, of course, we want to take the opportunity to speak with Dr. James Kinchin about his longtime and beloved music colleague at Parkside, Dr. Tim Bell, who, as we have been reporting all morning long, very suddenly and sadly passed away yesterday. the morning after he had been performing with the Racine concert band. And so this is an upsetting shock on so many levels. And of course, also very sad news for the many people who enjoyed his Saturday evening program here on WGTD called Big Bands and Beyond. So I'm glad that we can take the next few minutes to offer some words of tribute to this fine musician and human being. Dr. James Kinchin, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you.
So I'm happy but sad in that I'm so glad that you are here, but I'm just sadder than I can say that one of the things we need to do is offer a kind of a memorial tribute to Dr. Bell. And of course, you knew him far better than I did and worked with him considerably. So you can speak about his life and legacy as someone who was his colleague for many, many years. First of all, do you remember first meeting him? I mean, what are some of your earliest memories of knowing him? I suspect he was maybe already at Parkside when you came. When was that?
Well, so Tim was already there and had been there for quite some time. He, you know, is really, and I don't know that I can put a date. I'm sure that will come out in an obituary, a date when he came. But he was sort of part of that culture already that welcomed me when I came. I came in 1989. Hmm. I first met him on the day in February of 89 that I came to the campus for an interview. He was just very welcoming. Once I got there, very welcoming, somebody who really wanted to do everything he possibly could to help me feel at home, to help me fit in, to help me succeed at my appointment. In many ways, he was really sort of unassuming in many ways, because you know, here was somebody who brought to the table all that he did, and he was just very prolific in his music making, very talented, very accomplished, and yet he was just plain old Tim. I mean, that's the way he came across to you. And, you know, there was no pretense about him. There was no sort of putting on a show to try to impress this or that person or the other. I mean, he was just Tim. But he was just a musician extraordinaire. Many, many people will know him for his jazz work. Just an accomplished saxophonist, an accomplished teacher and conductor of jazz musicians. He molded the jazz program into something that was pretty impressive and formidable. That, you know, he had some awesome bands to come along. And I was telling my my daughter she was too young to ever know him, but to put him in perspective, he was also one of those people that whenever a touring popular artist would come to town, and you know, they bring rhythm sections, but they needed to put together a band of locals. He was one of the people that was welcomed on a wide variety of those shows by people who were international in stature.
Mm. Yeah, they would know his name know the very impressive gifts that he came to bear. And the other thing that I was going to say about that, and again, you saw this even more than I did, I'm sure, is that he had this tremendous talent, but also this love of collaboration. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really matter who was sitting next to him. I mean, whether they are an accomplished and even famous professional or just an earnest amateur in a local group, it just didn't seem to matter to him, those kind of distinctions.
No, I absolutely. You know, I think it's fair to say that he absolutely loved people, and he loved music, of course, and so he loved making music with people. And you're absolutely right. You know, his penchant for collaborating in a number of different ways. You know, before the show, we were talking about some instances where he had played with you. And by the way, the part of Tim that not as many people know is Tim as an extraordinary classical clarinetist.
Mm.
He was proficient at that instrument. He also taught clarinet to lots of people. We were talking about
right, not just at Parkside, but there were a number of years that he taught clarinet at Carthage, where yes. I'm on the music faculty, and I guess I had forgotten how long he did that, and I couldn't even say the exact names, but a number of years. But I was really struck when I saw name after name after name on Facebook of clarinetists from Carthage who were saddened by this news because Tim had been their teacher. Yeah. And so he left a legacy even beyond the considerable legacy that he left there at Parkside. Do you happen to recall what he taught at Parkside? Was it mostly the woodwind lessons and jazz band, or were there occasionally other things he taught there as well?
Well, you know, what you mentioned, the jazz, like the jazz ensemble, the combo, the private lessons, those were the things that were at the core of his teaching. But like a lot of us in music programs, particularly in fairly smallish music departments, you know, we find ourselves doing some other types of classes as well, like fundamentals of music and music appreciation and those kinds of things. And by the way, his jazz appreciation class, I think, almost always had a waiting list. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just incredibly popular. And one of the things you're talking about, his ability to really work and collaborate. On our campus, we have a sort of clearing committee that will look at syllabi of various courses and determine that the content of those courses is sufficient so that those courses can be recognized as diversity courses.
Mm.
And of course, that's a very desirable thing for any course because that gives you one more doorway into that course for students to enter. And so when the committee was looking at the jazz appreciation class, I will always remember how well Tim and I worked together so that he could make sure that he covered all of the musical bases, and yet at the same time to make sure that the class had sufficient content to be designated a diversity course.
Hmm.
And there were even times when he would ask me to come into the course and to do guest lectures and that sort of thing. And I always felt honored and humbled, really, that he did.
Mm. I think it's interesting also to think about the fact that when one thinks about, for instance, you and what you do, or at least what you typically do at Parkside, and then what typically somebody like Tim Bell did at Parkside, and you realize that both of those things are music, even though at a glance they might seem like they're on different continents or maybe even different planets, musically speaking, that it's all part of the same wonderful gift. And it's just really cool to think about Mozart masses and jazz in sort of the same breath. And it sounds like Parkside was a place where all of that and everything in between was celebrated, and that you all had a real closeness, that Tim wasn't just off in his own hallway doing his own thing apart from all of the stuff that you guys were doing more in the classical realm.
Oh, absolutely. Tim Bell and what Tim Bell did was integral to what we all were doing, and he was very much a part of it all. And we were talking about it earlier. You and I was so shocked to hear yesterday to receive the news of his passing. He even in his retirement, even though he has not worked on the campus for a few years now, his loss still leaves a huge void for us.
Was he able to come around Parkside very much? Had you seen very much of him since his retirement?
Yeah, yes, he would come around from time to time. And it was always great to see him, And it was never, you know, some big auspicious occasion, really. You know, he would come maybe for a concert or something, and you see him, and you know, and he would always sort of greet you in that way that was inimitable and unique to him. You know, maybe he would have a little funny something to say. He had a terrific sense of humor, you know, he was just that kind of person who just kind of put you at ease by having a little joke or a little wisecrack or whatever. But we would see him from time to time, and I'm further saddened that you know, we're doing a retirement dinner, the members of the faculty, to honor James McKeever and his wife Susan. James McKeever retired back in May.
Right.
And obviously one wants not only the present faculty to be there, but one also wants the past faculty. And, you know, and I will, I think, not ever erase from my email the message from Tim of not too long ago saying, Jerry and I will be there. And so that will be, you know, particularly poignant to have that gathering and Tim not be able to be there, although he will certainly be there in spirit.
Nicely put. In fact, he's going to remain in spirit in a lot of places and certainly in a lot of hearts. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. James Kinchin. He is the Director of Choral Activities at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. And Parkside was the happy professional home of Dr. Tim Bell for many, many years. So we've been spending these first minutes of our conversation today remembering Tim Bell, who sadly and quite unexpectedly passed away yesterday morning. And of course, listeners to WGTD knew his voice well from the wonderful program he hosted on Saturday evenings, a program he also helped create called Big Bands and Beyond. In the time that remains to us, of course, let's talk about how life goes on and music goes on, and what sounds like a really wonderful concert that you are going to be conducting this Sunday, the 22nd of October at 5 p.m. in the beautiful Francis Bedford Concert Hall on the campus of Parkside, a concert that will be a collaboration with some of the young singers at Indian Trails High School in Kenosha under the direction of John Che. Before we talk about this intriguing mass by Mozart, how often do these kind of collaborations happen, and what do you think they represent?
Well, the current series, which is formally labeled Experiencing Choral Treasures, had its inaugural performances last year. We had a performance that we shared with Milwaukee High School of the Arts doing the Nunez Garcia Requiem.
Yes.
And then with the Horlick Chorale, we shared the performance of the Haydn Little Organ Mass, which we did, both of those with the orchestra. And that's one of the things that makes it special. It gives the high schoolers who may not have the opportunity to do an extended work with orchestra the opportunity to do that, and for us to share that with them. And so I would say the goal is to have a couple of these in a year.
I suppose part of what makes this lovely is that it puts within the reach of a high school group the opportunity to do a work that maybe on their own might be a little bit much, although there are certainly high school groups probably could accomplish such a thing, but what a difference it would make to have accomplished collegiate singers in the mix as well. It just seems like a win-win for everybody.
Oh, absolutely. I look back to when I was in high school, and I think I just would have thought that I didn't have gone to heaven if I had had, if we had had the opportunity to join forces with the collegiate people and do something. So I think this is in and of itself special for them. You know, the work that we get to do, the fact that we get to do it collaboratively with them, the fact that we get to do it with orchestra, and we get to have them step outside of their accustomed everyday world to come and to be a part of our campus ambience, and that's good.
Fantastic. I am not acquainted with this particular Mass in C major, which you say is affectionately nicknamed the Sparrow Mass. So tell us more about this work and why you chose it.
Well, it is like the vast majority of Mozart's sacred works, something that was done while he was at Salzburg. And he was about 19 years old when he composed this.
So roughly the same age as many of your singers at Parkside.
Yes. And I mean, I try to keep that sort of in front of them, because it's easy to see all composers as people who have been deceased by centuries, and people who were already 50 and 60 before they started doing anything.
Right, walking around with a cane
with
and
a cane,
so on.
Yeah, right. And Mozart, when he assumed this position for the court at Salzburg, where he wrote for both the court and the cathedral, he was 17 years old. And so this particular Mass is typical in many ways of the form that we call Missa Brevis. And Missa Brevis, to be distinguished from Missa Solemnis, is a shortened form of the Mass. It still has all of the obligatory settings of the Mass liturgy text, but it is a shortened form, and it is relatively simpler, and something that usually can be brought off with more modest resources. Now, what makes this Mass setting a little bit different is that it will employ trumpets and timpani, which was not typical of the Missa Brevis. It was more in line with the Missa Solemnis, you know, for the big occasion. So it's interesting that this has that kind of trapping. And I think also that, and you're probably aware of this, that in some of the Missa Brevis settings of a number of composers, that there was a kind of pancaking of text in the credo, because the credo is so wordy, you know, and it can go on forever.
Right.
And, you know, there are some big masses where the credo is actually broken down into further subsections. Right?
Yeah.
So, but there's a pancaking where you've got two or three lines of text at once, and you've got the singer singing all of those lines simultaneously to get through it all. And Mozart avoids having that happen. And instead, you know, he does. It's a pretty chordal, you know, homophonic kind of treatment of that text, but it is pretty straightforward, and it involves soloists. And in this particular Mass, the soloists have not a whole lot to do independently. Much of their work is sort of within the context of quartet, and that makes for a very, very nice, very, very nice sound. And of course, I'm pleased to talk about the soloists a little bit.
If you like, sure.
They're all younger singers, and I'm real pleased. All very fine singers, and real pleased that three of them are graduates of our own program. And so we're just real happy to welcome them back to the stage. As it were, to sing with us. The soprano will be Joanna Jackson. The alto is Jane Wermeling. Our tenor is Edson Melendez. And the bass, and he would tell you very quickly he's baritone, is Timothy Keith Griffin Jr.
Very good. And how much has happened in terms of being in the room with the singers at Indian Trails who are joining you in the Mozart? Have they been to Parkside yet, or have you been to Indian Trails yet?
Yes, I've been to Indian Trails, and it was a wonderful, wonderful visit. They were, you know, my gosh, I'm just always floored when I've heard them before, and I'm always floored when I hear all of that talent, and what a terrific job John Che does in teaching them and training them, and how he cares about many things, including their singing. And of course, making good music. And so they were very responsive to me, and we worked together. I'm excited, as the kids might say. I'm pumped.
When will you have the chance to put singers and orchestra together?
Well, we will put them together. I've already worked with, as you might imagine, orchestra. And so we'll put them all together on Sunday in the early afternoon.
And then the performance. And we should mention that in addition to this Mozart Sparrow Mass, a relatively modest work in terms of its length, then also Indian Trails will be offering up some pieces,
yes,
and
yes.
The Parkside Choirs as well.
Yes, yes. And we're real happy to have them do do a short solo set. And then, you know, we'll be doing some things as well that will represent a variety of different matrices. So, for example, we'll be doing a wonderful greeting piece called San Banani from the South African culture. We'll be doing a piece from one of the fairly recent hit movies, La La Land. I'll have a smaller group that will be singing a couple of pieces from the Benjamin Britten, The Ceremony of Carols. A wonderfully beautiful piece by Pablo Casals called Nigrasum. We'll be doing. We'll be doing a variety of things in addition to the Mozart. But the Mozart is the main event.
Sure. And, of course, this concert is happening in one of the most exquisite spaces anywhere around for making music, that Francis Bedford Concert Hall, which you must so deeply appreciate and which so many of the rest of us deeply envy.
Oh, I can't begin to tell you how much I do appreciate it. And every time I walk in there, I mean, it is such a gem. It is such a gift to us. And if people haven't heard music in that hall, it's worth coming in that hall just to hear music, whatever is being performed.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to say that having been part of a couple of different choral concerts there and been in the audience for others, that, you know, particularly when it comes to singing, that's just, it's an incredible space in which to sing and in which to hear singing.
Yes.
So we hope people will seek out the opportunity to experience this concert on Sunday afternoon, 5 p.m. in the Francis Bedford Concert Hall. The choirs of the University of Wisconsin Parkside, in collaboration with, the top choir Indian Trails High School, under the direction of John Che. Again, Sunday at 5 p.m., I would assume tickets will be available at the door for people interested in the concert.
People will be able to pay at the door, yes.
Very good. And on the podium for the Mozart will be Dr. James Kinchin, Director of Choral Activities at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Dr. Kinchin, it's always a joy to reconnect with you. Thank you for being here, and thank you again for offering such warm and beautiful words of tribute in honor of your friend and colleague, Tim Bell. Thank you again for being here.
And thank you for the opportunity, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Rich Cohen, the author of a book called The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse, which looks at the long history of the Chicago Cubs and the long history of its fans, who, of course, waited for a long, long, long time before the Cubs finally became once again world champions in the world of Major League Baseball. That'll be tomorrow on The Morning Show. Support for The Morning Show comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Jack and Drea, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for The Morning Show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More